Basic Brewing Radio is sponsored in part by the American Homebrewers Association. Saturday, August 6th is Mead Day. See what the buzz is all about and celebrate this sweet homebrew holiday. Now through August 8th, the American Homebrewers Association is offering listeners $5 off an annual membership with the promo code MEADDAY22. Visit homebrewersassociation.org/basicbrewing to download a variety of mead recipes, find a homebrew supply shop, and dust off your mead-making skills with how-to videos. That's homebrewersassociation.org/basicbrewing to get $5 off for Mead Day when you join and renew by August 8th, 2022. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, July 21st, 2022. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Steve and I explore Club Night at HomebrewCon. It's the night where homebrew clubs from across the country get to strut their stuff for their fellow brewers. We taste delicious traditional and non-traditional brews and like them all. No big surprise there. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. And if you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs and our brewer's logbooks. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook as well. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. And many thanks to everybody who has helped out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. We got a ton of show to get to, but I first want to mention a couple of fun things from our friends and sponsors, Ricky and Kelly of Groenfell and Havoc Meaderies in Vermont. First off, Ricky the Meadmaker posted a video on their YouTube channel and Ricky's Brewing Journal showing what happens when you use Starsan instead of their regular cleaner on a mead fermenter. It looked to me like Bobby Brady's been doing laundry again. The second thing is fun, but also big news. Groenfell is debuting Honey Spritzers. Groenfell is combining craft mead with fruit seltzer to make a delicious summer treat. There's cranberry lime honey spritzer and cranberry apple honey spritzer, 4.2% ABV, so they're perfect for outdoor summer activities. And there's a honey spritzer box, which includes 2 4-packs of each cranberry lime and cranberry apple for only $39.96. That's four packs. While you're on Groenfell.com, pick up a mystery bottle box, too. Free shipping for orders over $75 to most states across the country. Check out all the honey-based deliciousness, including new honey spritzers, at family-owned and operated Groenfell.com. That's GroenFell. Okay, let's hit the floor. Not literally, at Club Night at HomebrewCon in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Steve Wilkes, here we are at Club Night in Pittsburgh, 2022.
I know, it's so exciting. I'm in Pittsburgh on Club Night. Hand me that Canadian club.
I'll have a shillelagh.
I'll have a shillelagh. Well, it's very exciting. It's a little more subdued than in previous years.
Right.
But it's very nice. It's very relaxed. Pittsburgh's a lovely city.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really pretty here. I highly recommend if you get a chance to come here and drink some beer and eat some food and look at the river. It's well worth it.
Yeah, we've got a hall full of booths. And now this is it's high pressure on which booth we're going to go to first.
I'm going to go to Shirley Booth.
Hazel.
Or Hazel.
Have a witch hazel beer.
Yeah.
Oh, we're already hitting references that nobody knows.
I know. It's sad, isn't it?
All right. Well, let's see where we go from here.
All right.
Tell me who you are and where you're from.
My name's Jim Fish. I'm from New Jersey, and I'm part of South Jersey Fermentation Club, formerly known as Barley Legal. But we got canceled.
Oh no. And what are you drinking?
This is a Flanders Red from Trash Homebrewers.
There you go. Three Rivers Alliance. of serious homebrewers. How is it?
It's pretty good.
I don't know if you think that you could do better, and maybe you have done better.
I have done better.
Tell us about that beer.
Back in 14, I won a gold medal in HomebrewCon or NHC for a Flanders Red.
What's the secret?
Serendipity. I made an old brewing and put a case of Oregon sour cherries, but just the cherries, not the water. And it turned it into a Flanders Red.
Yeah. So is patience the key?
No, it's making sure that the beer that you end up with is the category that you put the beer in, not the beer that you intended to make.
That's sage advice. I heartily agree with that. Make the beer first, then decide what it is.
I have a friend who's a national beer judge, and whenever I enter, I go to him, all right, what category do I put this in?
That makes sense. All right. Well, I don't know that I want Flanders Red to be my first beer.
Maybe not.
Pliny the Elder clone at 12.1%.
Oh, well. Wow.
No.
Yeah, I want to ease in.
Last night.
What I need is a British mild or something to ease into it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of lagers around here, and they got a Belgian blonde, so that's an easier way to go.
Okay, I think I'll start there.
Okay. Well, it was good meeting you guys again.
Yeah, cheers.
Cheers.
Tell me who you are and where you're from.
Erica Zero from Clifton Township, Pennsylvania, part of the Scranton Brewers Guild.
And what do y'all brew mostly?
It's a variety of styles, actually, from our group. A lot of us love the German and Belgian beers, but we also have great mead, IPAs, lagers, saisons. It's really quite a variety. Some really great brewers.
And are you a brewer yourself?
I am a brewer in the making. I'm an assistant brewer right now with my husband. He started brewing in 2019. Right now I'm more of the gopher. Turn the water on, turn the water off, grab me that, mix this, hold this. But we are have introduced my eldest son into brewing, and he's very excited, so he is starting now. He didn't make it to this convention, but we did purchase a lot of books and wonderful things for him to get his brewing career started. So it's has been wonderful so far.
Awesome. It's a family affair.
Absolutely, absolutely. They love to try things, to learn the chemistry behind it, to work together and see what the finished product is like, and then share it with our family and friends.
Awesome. Good to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well. Thank you.
All right, so tell me who you are and where you're from.
My name is Scott Hersher. I'm with the Scranton Brewers Guild.
And what am I drinking here?
You're drinking a Wee Heavy that's got some smoked peated malt in it.
Wow. I said I didn't want to start big, but here I am. How big is this beer?
It's not that big. It's 7.5%, 8%. It's not huge, but yes, it's big.
So what's the key to making a... This is delicious, by the way. It's very drinkable. What's the key to making a delicious, drinkable Wee Heavy?
A lot of malt and a lot of time.
You're a man of few words. I'm still drinking.
I brewed this about a month and a half ago. So this is about 45 days old. I let it sit for a long time before I kegged it. And that gave it time for all of the flavors to begin to come together and begin to mature. Otherwise, it just winds up tasting, if you serve it too young, it tastes muddy. You know, everything's just sort of mashed together. And you want them all to kind of break out. So when you drink, if you want to think about it that way, you can kind of deconstruct the beer.
And what's your secret to making sure that you have a healthy fermentation with such a big beer?
I use a good, healthy amount of yeast. I make a starter, which means I make a small, like, half gallon or so batch of beer, and I pitch that so it's nice and live. And then I try to keep my fermentation temperatures a little bit low. Otherwise, it just blows up and gets all over the place.
Well, it's delicious.
Thank you.
And is this the mead maker right here?
This is the mead maker.
This is Ed Wolkowski.
Okay, tell me who you are and where you're from.
I'm Ed Wolkowski from North Abington Township, which is right outside of Scranton.
And you're drinking the mead.
I'm drinking the black currant mead, which is absolutely delicious. I'm very, very happy to have this. And please share a little bit about how you made it and particularly the amount of fruit you used.
Well, the story behind that, we have a local commercial mead maker by Stan Schreffler, who owns a mead shop in a town near us. And they were brewing a batch of orange blossom honey one day that did not ferment out fully. So they didn't know what to do with it. So they put in some fermented raspberry wine that they had. They blended it. So I kind of did the same thing. I had an orange blossom honey mead that I finished up very sweet. And I just cut it with some fermented raspberry wine. And that's the mix. Or actually, that's the blackcurrant one or from fresh. Yeah, that's from my backyard. I grow blackcurrants.
Wow. So what's the batch size and how much fruit do you use in that particular batch size?
I do usually 6-gallon batches, and that's about 6 pounds of fruit, about a pound per gallon.
Wow, that's tremendous. Well,
it's a strong flavored fruit, so it doesn't take too much, really.
I was going to say, I make a lot of blueberry mead. I don't know why, but I guess we just have a lot of blueberries. But the flavor of the currants is much stronger than the blueberries, yeah.
It's a distinctive flavor that you don't see much in the United States. It's more European kind of thing, but I like the flavor profile.
Yeah, that's actually why I wanted to try it, because it's like you just don't get black currant very often. Yeah.
Try the raspberry also. We think that came out well.
I'm going to have to get a sample of that.
Definitely.
Good job. Thanks,
thank
guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tell me who you are and where you're from.
Oh, yeah. I'm Mike Onaskanich from Frackville, Pennsylvania. I belong to the Pennsylvania Ailers out of Susquehanna Valley. So, and that's, eastern Pennsylvania.
How long you been brewing?
Oh, I would say off and on about 20 years. Yeah.
Wow. So you're old school.
Oh, yeah, I am. But since I retired, I'm full-time at this now. This is kind of fun.
What am I drinking here?
You're drinking an American IPA. And what I did was, one time I came up with this recipe, and I used just all American, wheat, American ale, everything American, the yeasts and all. And I actually entered it with my kid. So he says, Dad, brew me a batch. So I brew him a batch. He went first place with it. I says, okay. So I always kept this recipe, for a competition and all. I just sort of just use it. Sometimes I'll tweak it for something different, but this is the original IPA that won the first time around.
It's very nice. It's drinkable. It's solid. There's a wonderful hop presence. I wouldn't call it, would you? I wouldn't call it a West Coast IPA. I wouldn't call it a New England IPA. This is kind of an old school IPA.
American IPA, old school, right. And I figured it'll be the summertime we're here. I figure an IPA is a little more refreshing. And we do have other refreshing beers here, so and some heavy ones. So help yourself.
So talk about your malt bill.
My malt bill, okay, what do I have in it?
It's a timed response. You gotta
that's it. I obviously the two row pale ale. I can't even remember right off my head.
I would imagine there's some crystal malt in there.
Oh yeah, there is. There is crystal. And then my hops, I just don't even know my bill. I had it written there, but it's not on there now. The paper got lost. I knew somebody would ask me all these things. All right, now let's put it this way. It's a secret.
There you go.
All right.
Now, talk about your hopping schedule. I mean, nowadays, the hops are more toward either the end of the boil or after the boil. It's less about the hot side. This tastes like it's more kind of solid bitterness. So it seems like to me that it's, kind of when I started brewing, you had the hops at the beginning of the boil and kind of the middle of the boil, so it's to me, it's delicious. It tastes like it's more toward the hot side.
Well, that's what I did. There's the 60 minute with the hop, and then it's like 45, 30. And then at the end, there might be like a 10 minute. And then I do dry hop it. In the second fermentation, I do a dry hop. Yeah. So that's where that comes in.
Yeah, well, it's wonderful. It's, I would drink pint after pint of this beer. It's very good.
Well, thank you. Pleasure talking.
Yeah, congratulations.
All right, thank you.
Someone dropped a glass.
Is that a broken glass already? Yeah. Tell me who you are and where you're from.
Dave Ward with the Butler County Brewing Society. We're out of just north of Cincinnati.
And what am I drinking here?
That's a Trappist Single. It's called The Apprentice.
Oh, that's nice. Tell me about this beer.
I've actually brewed that as a starter for a triple. I'm a really big fan of a triple, and so I wanted to build up the yeast, and I brewed a single first, then pitched the triple on top of that, and I entered both of them in a contest out in Jersey, and the single actually won best of show. The triple did pretty marginal, so kind of worked just the backwards of what I expected it to do.
So maybe you're not the person to ask this, but what's the, since you kind of did it accidentally, but what's the key to build, to brewing an award-winning triple or a single?
Just monitoring the temperature, keeping your temperature under control, starting out cool and then raising up the temperature a little bit as it's fermenting along, and having a good starter of yeast. So that's what works for me.
I would imagine it's a pretty simple malt bill.
It is. It's very simple. It's a Belgian malt. There was maybe one other malt in there, but very, very basic malt bill, yes.
And what's the yeast?
The yeast is the Ardennes yeast. It's from Y Yeast. I think it's 35, 22, I think.
And probably not a whole lot of hops.
No, very little hops. It's got some Saaz in it, and it's got some Hallertau in it.
So what makes it a Belgian single? I mean, it's just a nice, delicious pale ale. You know, it's not too Belgian-y, you know what I'm saying? There's not a whole lot of, yeasty characteristics in there. It's just a nice, drinkable pale ale.
So keeping the singles that have a lower alcohol, you know, the pale cover, they're just very approachable, very clean. It's something that you can have several beers of. Still has some sugar added to it to keep it very light and have it finished very clean, but nothing like a triple. A triple's got, you know, a much heavier percentage of the sugars added to it.
Well, it's delicious, and I could drink several pints of that. It's very good.
Appreciate it. Thanks for coming by.
Tell me who you are and where you're from.
Mike Marshall, New Hampshire.
What's your club?
Seacoast Homebrew Club.
And what are we drinking here?
A lobster goza.
Now, all right.
That sounds like there is no Zool, there's only lobster goza.
Tell us about this beer.
Yeah, so it's a goza. You know, we're the seacoast, so I wanted to use kind of ingredients that you would find on the seacoast. So it's got two live lobsters, which I boil for 10 minutes in the boil. And that's how I got it. It works really well, I think, with the goza style, because it has that saltiness.
Yeah, there's a saltiness from the. So you get the sea, the saltiness from the sea, and I'm still working through the foam. I'm getting down to the. So, how did you put the lobster in there?
So I took two live lobsters, put them in a muslin bag, and then dumped them in the boil for 10 minutes. Yeah.
And then did you eat the lobster?
Of course I eat the lobsters.
Okay. This will pair well with the hoagie roll IPA that's over there. I think we should hook these guys up.
Yeah.
So, lobster is a pretty... To me, lobster is a vessel for butter. Lobster in itself, at least the lobster I've had in Arkansas, doesn't have a whole lot of character on its own. Do you get as an experienced lobster connoisseur, do you get a lot of lobster character in this beer?
Not a ton, but I try to go. I'm not trying to. I want to make it for everybody because I'm not everybody's a lobster or a seafood fan. So I try to get more like the brininess that you get from like seafood rather than just a direct lobster flavor, because I think that could go the wrong way if you try to overdo it. Like if I let it in the boil longer, I think you might get more, but then I don't know what that would bring. So I just try to be careful on that.
Oh, it's super good. It's got a little briny. You know, it's definitely a goza. So congratulations. Although I am breaking out in a rash.
Oh, yeah, he's allergic to shellfish.
I can't promise. If you have an allergy, I don't know, but you may not want to have it.
No, I am getting a little bit of savoriness to it. I don't know if that's my imagination, but it is a...
It's not. It's there.
It is a delicious beer, though, but it's not kind of like a greasy kind of a thing at all.
Yeah.
So it's not a negative thing. I'd drink a pint of this.
Yeah. I've been really happy. This is the fourth time I brewed it. So I usually brew it for things like this. I brought it to NHC 3 years ago. We have a New England homebrew jamboree that I bring it to each year. So, yeah, I really like it. So,
good job. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks for stopping by.
All right. Tell me who you are and where you're from.
Bobby Murjeski. I own brewhardware.com. And so this
Who's your club?
Oh, it's the Garden State Homebrewers. And this was actually made with an old club member of mine, Gary Weston, and he's sort of the mastermind behind this, but I just did all the hard lifting. This is a Boché ice cider sizer, so it's a pretty complicated mess. The honey gets boiled in a crock pot until it hits about 240 degrees. Then we took some Pine Hill Orchard cider up in Massachusetts and freeze concentrated it. Several times until it practically won't freeze anymore. Blend that all together, ferment it, and then it went into a dad's hat bourbon barrel for a year. And this is another year after that. So it's finally smoothing out, and it's heavy duty. It's 12.5%.
So you freeze concentrated the cider before fermentation.
Correct, yeah.
So nobody can accuse you of distilling.
Correct. Yeah, this is all pre-fermentation. It's all fermented together with the honey as well. A lot of times, to sort of cut your chances of failure down, some people will ferment the mead separately and the cider separately and blend to taste, but we just went right for the whole hog and just went for it, and it came out really nice. I think this is a fine product.
It's super good, yeah. And you can catch both the honey and the apples, which is nice. Sometimes one of them gets lost. Congratulations.
And the caramel character is not so overpowering that it's, yeah, you know, it's a part of the mix. So what was the original gravity, and what's your key to fermenting something that I assume is such a high gravity?
I believe it was 1138 was the original gravity. And one of the ways to get this to ferment out is, SO4 dry yeast. And it was rehydrated with GoFirm Protect, so that really protects it from that initial osmotic shock that when you drop it in. It was also step nutrient added. I think we used Fermate O, probably fed four times throughout the first 2 weeks. And it just did it. It wasn't that challenging. Kept it in the low 60s, probably 61 degrees for the entire ferment. Maybe at the end we boosted it a little bit just to make sure it finished up, but it was, it wasn't a challenging ferment at all.
And there's no spice in this?
No. I mean, I actually took a medal with this in one of our local comps, and everybody was so sure. They said, I'm trusting that the caramelization of the honey made it taste like this is spiced, and that is actually right. Yeah, there is no spice in it at all.
Yeah, I get, maybe it's my brain, but I get apple pie spice.
Right.
You know, I get cinnamon, maybe a little bit of clove, but you said there was wood in there somewhere?
It was in the dad's hat barrel for a year, and it was the first use of that barrel. So there was a little bourbon in there. You know, maybe some of that oak and bourbon character kind of brought some of those spices forward a little bit. But I think the caramelization of the honey brings a lot of interesting character that you normally wouldn't find in honey somehow. And one thing I didn't mention is some of the honey was only brought to, like, the marshmallow phase. There's a certain temperature where marshmallow is the prominent character, and then a little later on it goes caramel. So half of it was done to marshmallow and the other half to caramel to bring a little bit more complexity.
And how do you know when it's marshmallow and how do you know when it's caramel?
If you Google Boché, you'll see that there's like a temperature to flavor characteristic, but I just use my tongue, right?
Yeah.
Just taste it.
Be very careful at home.
Oh, yeah.
Do not put burning sugar in your mouth.
I should clarify that while you're cooking your honey, actually in a crock pot is a great way to do it so that it doesn't boil over. You smear a little bit on a white paper plate every 15 minutes or so, and you kind of watch the color get darker. And it cools off, and you can kind of taste where you're at, pretty quickly. But, it's an experiment. Who knows what you're going to get out of it? All I know is $150 in ingredients later. And we got lucky this time. And the cider is from Pine Hill up in Massachusetts. And I got to be honest, that is some of the most award-winning cider going in the country. It is really fabulous cider.
Well, it pays to use good ingredients, for sure. This is absolutely delicious.
Yeah. I'm curious, how long did the honey have to stay in the crock pot?
I want to say that it was about 2.5 hours.
On low?
Yeah, yeah. You don't want it will really bubble over pretty badly when it starts getting going on the bottom. But the crock pot heats sort of evenly from all sides. So you can keep it on low, and it gets it done pretty quickly, whereas if you put it in your brew pot, it's all the heat's on the bottom, and it's just going to be blowing sugar out of the top. So, yeah.
And again, be very careful when you're boiling honey. Do not burn yourself. Sugar burns are very bad.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's a great project. It takes a long time, but you should be careful with it.
Well, congratulations. It's amazing.
Oh, thank you very much.
I brewed a version of the Bell's Two-Hearted Ale clone recipe again, this time using Maris Otter for most of the grain bill instead of American Two-Row, and a couple of free things that I got at HomebrewCon. Of course, I used my Warthog brew-in-a-bag system from our friends and sponsors Desiree and Dave from HighGravityBrew.com, who recently celebrated 20 years of marriage, by the way. Congratulations to Dave and Desiree. Anyway, into my Warthog system, I put 13 pounds or 5.9 kilograms of Maris Otter along with 8 ounces or 227 grams of 40 Lovibond Crystal, and I used the mash mode on the Warthog controller to rest at 150 degrees Fahrenheit or 65 C for about an hour and a quarter. Then I collected my wort and used some free Galaxy hops that I got from Yakima Valley Hops at HomebrewCon along with some dry Kveik yeast from Omega. And the boil went perfectly in my Warthog system, of course, and I chilled to around body temperature before pitching the Kveik and letting the beer ferment in a bucket on my hot patio. Primary fermentation was done in about a day, and I dry hopped with a bunch of the Galaxy after I brought the beer in to cool off a bit. Stay tuned for more details in later shows on that beer and on Basic Brewing Video, of course. You know, Steve and I love our Warthog systems from HighGravityBrew.com. Whether you're looking for just a standalone controller or total turnkey systems, HighGravityBrew.com has you covered. Use the promo code EBC75BB and save $75 off your Warthog purchase. That's at family-owned and operated HighGravityBrew.com. That's HighGravityBrew.com.
Tell me who you are and where you're from.
I'm S.J. Poor, and I am from York, Pennsylvania.
And you say we've met before.
We have. We've actually did a bit of a podcast a couple years ago for the S.J. Poor Challenge.
So there you go. I told you, number one, I've done 800 shows.
Yes.
And number two, I might have had some beers.
That tends to happen in these areas, you know.
What are we drinking?
So what we have here is the Little Face Lemonade. So it's a hard lemonade that comes in at 10%, which makes it a nice, easy drinker, right, at 10%.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Number one, you wouldn't know that it was 10%. Number two, it's delicious.
It's very good. Wow. I've had a few beers, so it tastes like lemon. What else is in it? Tell me the recipe. Okay, so we work out, usually I either use DME or LME, so that's the malt base part of it, which is why we call it a malt beverage. And then we use a frozen lemonade drink mix, lots of sugar, and either apple juice or white grape juice. Whatever it is, make sure there's no sorbates in it, you know, to kill the yeast all. You don't want to have anything that's pasteurized or that's live, you know what I mean, that could kill off the yeast. So we ferment it out. Usually doesn't ferment out very long. Use champagne yeast. Ferment it out. So that blows through it pretty quick, usually about 5 days. And then you back sweeten it with more frozen lemonade drink mix and sugar. But I always like to kind of back the sugar off a little bit so it's not as acidic. Because if you put a lot of sugar in there, it kind of makes it a little acidic. I usually use about 4 cups of sugar to back sweeten it.
And then
do you use some sorbate to preserve it?
I do.
Yeah, so what I'll do is on this particular batch, I punch it in the mouth with some metabisulfite and then potassium sorbate to finally finish it off.
So would this be a kind of a cousin of a hard seltzer kind of a thing?
Yeah, it could be, yeah. Pre-seltzer. We've been doing this for years.
Well, this is, yeah. Well, yeah. It's lots better than...
There we go. That's what we want to hear.
Yeah, it's the better
better sister, better cousin of the hard seltzer. No, this would get you in trouble real quick.
It does. Well, I refer to it as a nap in a little tiny glass. You know, that's kind of like where I go with it.
Coma in a cup.
Yeah, exactly.
Coma in a cup.
No, it's very clean. So, you know, there's no fermentation artifacts. There's no do you have to use a nutrient of any sort?
Yeah, we do. I use yeast energizer, yeast nutrient, because there is a lot of fermentables in there, and we want to be able to make sure that the yeast is going to be able to reach it. Yeah, most definitely. And there's also like 3 pounds of honey in there as well.
Oh, my God.
Well, this is remarkable. We've had some lovely non-beers already. Some meads, a Boucher, and now this. This is wonderful. It's cool.
Yeah. You never know what you... It's like every time I walk up to a booth and I say, tell me what you got, and give it, you know, it's like you never know what you're going to get.
That's what makes homebrewing great, right?
Yeah, and it's almost always good.
Always, always, always.
Well, it's good to talk to you again.
Yep. Thank you very much.
Allegedly.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to have to go back in the archives and I'll be like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that guy. I remember him.
That was a great conversation. I'm losing it.
You need more beer. That's what you need.
Oh, well, I don't know. Thank you all.
Thank you very much.
All right. Tell me who you are and where you're from.
My name is Dave, and I am from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
We have Dave and Desiree from HighGravityBrew.com. Hi, Desiree.
Hello.
And you got friends. Who you got?
We have friends. My best friend moved here to Pittsburgh. How long ago?
A few months.
It's only been a few months, and coincidentally, the conference was here, so it worked out really well for us.
Yeah. So introduce us.
Okay, so this is Kat Winkler, and then this is Nate Winkler.
Hi.
Hi.
What do you think of the craziness so far?
I think it's great. I'm having a great time.
Absolutely fantastic.
What are y'all drinking?
Drinking the Hefeweizen from Scabs.
Yeah, which I don't know if that's the most appetizing name for a homebrew club, but
I assumed it was because, you know, this is kind of the land of unions and, you know.
Oh.
That was my theory behind it.
Best crab I've tasted in a while.
Yeah. Oh. Well, there was a period I went through in grade school, but, you know. So what are you drinking?
I am drinking the hard lemonade from the Scabs.
Yeah, that's what we just, yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, be careful.
Yeah, I need to start telling them to not give me full pours, because they're all doing it. 9% beer, full pour. All pull, just stop it.
What do you got there, Dave?
It is the Saison from the Scab Boot.
What do you think?
It's pretty good. It's really good.
Brewed with Dave's EBC 350.
Right. What now?
It was brewed with Dave's EBC 350, our Warthog.
Oh, no wonder it's so good.
Warthog beer is the best.
Shameless.
They take the pain out of propane right here.
That's right.
Well, this is a smaller gathering than in the past.
It really is.
But I'm feeling it this year. You know, it's I kind of like a smaller gathering.
You know, it. So the first several years that we did this, they felt really cozy and comfy, and then we did reach a point where club night was almost too much. So I agree. I'm feeling the better vibes. And all the beers have been good so far.
Yeah. Everything we've had has been good.
Yeah.
It's always good to see y'all.
What? Sorry,
it's
what?
It's always good to see you, too.
Yeah. I was like, what? What'd you say, huh?
We've got club night hearing already.
Yes. It doesn't take long.
All right. We got to taste more stuff. Brad Smith, a beersmith. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm very well.
It's a beautiful day, isn't it?
You know, the humidity is awesome here in Pittsburgh. You know, we're from Northwest Arkansas, where you can cut the humidity with a knife. When I heard it was going to be 90 degrees here, I was going to like, oh, but this is wonderful.
So we're at club night and you're talking about humidity, is that right?
I thought you brought it up. What do you think about this year's show?
I've enjoyed it so far. A little smaller than normal, but it's kind of nice because you can find people, you know?
Yeah. We get to see a lot of the same people that we see at these things because they're dedicated and they come. But it's been a couple of years. It's always good to see the, you know, familiar faces.
Yeah, 3 years, and we're glad to be back. Really glad to be back.
How are things at Beersmith?
Really good, actually. We launched a new web version recently, and that's been gone over really well with the community, so I'm kind of happy with that. And doing a big drawing tomorrow at the Homebrew Conference, so I'm looking forward to that, too.
And you've got a podcast as well.
I do, yeah, the Beersmith Podcast. I think we're on episode 259. So, I don't know, like 11, 12 years now it's been going. So, well, a lot of fun.
Well, you know, the week before this, I posted episode 800.
800. Oh, you're well ahead of me then.
You got a little catching up to do.
I only do two a month, so I'm not.
And yours, not is, quite yours is quality over quantity, I think.
Yeah, it is. It's higher quality, definitely.
It's always good to see you, Brad.
It's great to see you. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Tell me who you are and where you're from.
My name's Ken Kazmersky. I'm from Wonder Lake, Illinois. I'm a member of the Chicago Homebrewers Group. They threw down the gauntlet. They says, you got to make a Chicago-style hot dog beer. So I gave it a try, and I knew it was a gimmick. Handed it in to that club and another club, and they both said, you got to put it in competition. Put it in competition. It came back at 36s, two 36s. But the best part about it is there is a ballpark brew fest in Schaumburg, Illinois, every year. It's open to professional brewers, but they have a table for home brewers. My beer's been there 5 years now.
Wow. Okay, now what are the things that you can and can't? I understand that there's rules, just like Chicago pizza. There's rules about Chicago hot dogs. You can and cannot put on the hot dog.
A Chicago-style hot dog has pickles, relish, and it's got to be neon green relish, mustard, and tomatoes, and celery salt, and celery seed, and onions.
And all that went in the beer?
That's all in the beer. There is, and the tagline at the Beer Fest is, no hot dogs were harmed in the making of this product. But you know what it is? It's your brain. It just says, I'm having a hot dog right now.
So are there any of the spices from the hot dog itself in there?
Yes, everything is in there. After I make a blonde ale, we take and we put all of the ingredients, except for a hot dog, in a Muslim bag and let it sit for a week, and it tastes like a Chicago-style hot dog.
Steve, what do you think of this theory?
I think it's a great idea. I've already had a lobster goza. So that was from the East Coast. Now in the middle of the country, we're going to have a hot dog blonde.
Oh. And somebody has
My son has been carrying these for me. So I hope I don't have...
Does he have an opener?
I don't have my keychain.
I don't have my keychain. Uh-oh, here we go. We're going to have a hot dog beer.
Please don't gush. We've been walking all day.
Oh, it didn't.
It didn't.
Okay, now.
Like I say, it's just a gimmick. It's all right.
I didn't check to make sure what mine was empty. I can't remember what I had in there before.
It smells like a hot dog.
Oh, it definitely smells like a hot dog.
Okay, now give it a taste.
All right.
Tastes like a hot dog. It's really, really good.
That's a new thing. That's a new beer.
In theory, it should taste terrible.
It should.
But it doesn't.
No, and I was really happy with it. Everybody that I ever talked to about this, they all back off like I'm a vampire. But then they give it a try. They say, well, I can't drink more than a pint of this, but it's acceptable.
You know, when I was a little boy at my daddy's knee, he drank beer mixed with sauerkraut juice. This kind of reminds me of that.
Okay, and the secret with this, I saw on a cooking show that ingredients meld better with sauerkraut. There is sauerkraut in here.
Ah!
There you go.
Yeah, I also get the relish.
Yes.
That's a prominent flavor to me.
Some people get more of the onions. Other people get the dill pickles, hot peppers.
I get a lot of onion, and I get dill. I get a dill thing. Yeah. Wow. This is terrific. And I'm with you. I wouldn't want more than a pint, but I really like it.
Yeah.
You
know? And it's a thrill that you guys like it. I really appreciate it. Cheers.
Cheers, punk.
Do you go by Ken or Kenneth?
I go by Ken.
Okay, Ken. Ken, this is the best hot dog beer I've ever had.
Thank you.
I'm kind of over being surprised because...
You guys surprise us all of the time.
Well, I just guys bring us beers kind of like this, and it's like, oh, that can't be, and they're always good, almost always. Yeah. There was a curry thing a few years ago.
That was good for like an ounce or two.
Yeah.
That was like, oh, that was tasty. I'm glad I had that.
I'm kind of ready to get a hot dog. I really am.
Yeah. Actually, I wanted a hot dog for lunch, and the hot dog stand was closed. Now I'm complete.
So now I'm hoping that this next year I'm able to pour this again at the stadium.
All right. Good job, Ken.
Thank you. It was an honor meeting you guys.
Thank you very much.
Tell me who you are and where you're from.
Sure. My name is Becky Herberson. I am from Southern York County, PA, part of the Scabs Homebrew Club.
And this is what we get for hanging around too long. We get two scabs.
Oh.
I just want. Did you have to cross a picket line to get here? Or?
No picket lines, but, you know, we had to carry a whole bunch of stuff in here. What do you think?
Oh, I haven't tasted it yet, but I smelled it, and I know what it smells like. Tell me what it is.
It's called Where Are My Keys? It is a key lime pie kettle sour, brewed with Omega Lacto Blend, fresh key lime juice. I made a simple syrup with that, vanilla bean paste, my favorite brewing secret. You don't have to buy the expensive vanilla beans. And some graham cracker.
Oh my God! Okay, you gotta taste this. All right,
comes in at 4.99%.
Wow! My son Will he loves key lime pie.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And this tastes exactly like a key lime pie.
That's amazing. So I've had a hot dog beer and now a key lime pie.
You had a full meal.
I have.
Well, we really like when we brew our sours to make sure that they taste like what they say they're going to taste like. Because a lot of the time, especially like a key lime, can get lost in the tartness and the pH of the sour, right? So we also use one of our other tricks is Loran oils. They're a very concentrated flavored oil that people use in candy making. So it was probably a 375, tiny, tiny little bottle to boost the key lime without the tartness.
So how do you get the crust?
So that is the one area where we cheat a little with some extract, but there is a graham cracker extract that we do use for that because I haven't quite cracked the boiling down the graham crackers and getting all of that balance yet. But I'm the flavor gal. My husband does the hard labor, though I could brew it all, but I love doing all the flavoring and coming up with the recipes.
You know, we talk about crust all the time, and how do we get that crust flavor in the fruit beers? Now we found the secret.
Yeah, no kidding. A graham cracker extract.
Yeah, and, you know, we were really careful with extracts because I can taste when it's an extract.
Yeah.
But the graham cracker one is light enough. It comes in it's a tiny bottle. We only use a touch enough to taste that graham cracker, but to make sure we do a pumpkin ale. My husband's been brewing for 25 years, entering in competitions all the time, and that's where we started playing with it, and it's really worked well.
Well, this is delicious. Like I say, Will would love this because he loves key lime pie. This tastes exactly like a liquid key lime pie.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. We're really excited about it. And apparently everyone's been walking over saying, I've been hearing about this key lime beer, and we've almost kicked 5 gallons in an hour and a half.
Well, I'm glad you found us and saved us some before it was gone.
There you go. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Here you go. And have a sticker.
Woohoo! Thank you, Rebecca.
Yeah, nice
really
to meet you.
I hope you enjoyed last week's show, where we spent time at the booth of our friends and sponsors at Imperial Organic Yeast. Dr. Matt Winans did a great job of explaining the yeast hybridization process to create a new yeast strain, Imperial I-22 Capri. I'm enjoying the results of that hybridization, even though I can't say it, with the beer that I brewed with Capri. Check out last week's Basic Brewing video for more details on that. It's just the start of more exciting things to come from Imperial. From what I'm understanding, they're working on more hybrid strains along with bioprospecting. That's testing the viability of wild yeasts that they're collecting and working with. So I'm really looking forward to hearing more about that. Imperial has been an innovator from the very beginning. With 200 billion cells in each easy-to-open package, my stir plate is dusty because I don't use it anymore to make starters for moderate gravity 5-gallon batches. And if I pitch by early afternoon, my airlock is usually bubbling before bedtime. Ask your local homebrew store about the new I-22 Capri from Imperial Organic Yeast and check out all the details at imperialyeast.com. That's imperialyeast.com.
Tell me who you are and where you're from.
Jonathan Bice from Newcastle, PA. I'm part of the Trash Homebrew Club.
And what's Trash stand for?
It's the Three Rivers Alliance of Serious Homebrewers.
And what am I drinking here?
You have a Best Bitter. It was brewed with juice from Imperial Yeast.
Oh, well, there you go. So,
and then it's also got Golden Promise, some roast oat malt, and some caramel.
It's very good. You know, I've been having a lot of delicious but kind of wacky things, you know, kind of on the fringe things, and it's really nice to have a nice drinkable. Of course, everything I've had has been great, but you know, this is a nice sessionable, everyday, solid beer.
Thank you. Yeah, we've got, if you go to the other extreme, right, our club has some quads and some big Imperial Porters. They're pretty good. But there's some. Did you see the cask ales over there? There's some casks I want to try.
Now you're advertising for other.
I know. I can't help it. We have like 14 taps. So, I mean, everything here, I haven't had a bad beer.
So. Is this your first club night?
Serving, yes.
Oh, but you've been here before.
Yeah, I've been to Rhode Island. I've been to Portsmouth and Baltimore.
So is this the kind of beer that you like to brew the most?
I'm all over the place. Favorite style, Czech lager.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So what's the key to that?
Right water profile, good yeast, right? I mean, those are nice, clean, little sweetness. That's what I love about them.
So on the Czech lager, do you adhere to the traditional lagering temperatures?
I do, yeah. Probably not the amount of time, though. I'm probably too greedy. We've got to get that beer sooner than later.
So. But, of course, you got to have a diacetyl rest, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. Got to prevent that off flavor.
Number two. I can tell already that it's going to be an early night maybe for me. I don't know.
You think so? Well, you should make sure you at least try one
more. Well, give me something else. Give me something else from your club.
You want something lighter? Have you tried the Koji beer?
Oh, no.
Koji Lager?
Like Koji as in...
Yeah.
As in sake Koji?
Yep. Who brewed this one? Do you remember Carmelo?
Matt, you brewed the... Did you brew the Koji beer?
Yes.
All right, tell me who you are and where you're from.
I'm Matt Ferretto from Pittsburgh.
And you're with...
I'm with Trash as well.
You're with Trash?
Yep.
I feel like I might be trashed.
You might be. Did you have the Koji beer yet?
No, I've got it in my hand.
All right, it's almost 8% alcohol, so the enzymes really worked it down all the way to zero gravity. So it was only started at 1050, but with the Koji sugars and starches, it ended up about 62 to start, but it went all the way to zero, so it's at almost 8% alcohol.
Wow.
What would you guess as far as attenuation before I told you that, actually?
Oh, I didn't. Matt, my palate is blown at this point.
So there's a little bit of sweetness to it, even though it's at zero gravity. So if you notice like a little bit of like vanilla or a little bit of sweetness. So
yeah, there
but
is.
But again, it's technically very dry.
It reminds me, I went to the Matt Winans presentation on sake today, and you know, even though I'm sure that sake was dry, there's some kind of fruity sweetness to that as well. So when did you add the Koji, and you know, talk about your process?
So I added 1.5 pounds of Koji right at yeast pitch. So right at, as soon as I pitched the yeast, it was a 5-gallon batch. I added, like I said, 1.5 pounds. So I made the Koji myself. So it's just a rice Koji, for the most part, like I said, I get like cantaloupe to me, overripe cantaloupe. Somebody else said like soursop. So you get very much like tropical fruits, a little bit of vanilla maybe to it. But yeah, so like the base yeast was a lager, you know, a fast fermenting lager yeast. So it was meant to be clean, so you can kind of taste mostly the koji character in the beer. So most of the flavors, the fruit, are from the koji.
So you went through the traditional beer mashing process, but then
so
added the...
Actually, I didn't brew the beer. So this was a big brew. We made 50 gallons of beer at Moore Beer Warehouse in Ambridge, and I just took it home. So it was the big brew beer that we did, the Community American Lager. So it was that recipe that you can get online. Regular beer yeast, and then I took it home. Like I said, diluted it down a little bit, down to 1050, added the koji, let it go.
Wow. I've never heard of that before.
Well, now you did.
No, but the mouthfeel itself is dry. But you're right, there is some fruity sweetness in there. And it's unlike any beer probably that I've ever tasted. Do you know of any other beer that's been done this way?
Yeah, there's several others, and it's done, typically it's done in the mashes, which is most common. But there's other beers. I mean, there's probably at least a dozen other ones out there. Usually it's with like a collaboration with a sake brewery, because it's kind of hard for a brewery to make koji on their own. But yeah, there's definitely some out there. I know North American Sake Brewery in Richmond did a collab with a lager brewery in town. That one's really good. Off Color has done a koji beer. There's definitely some. There's actually a brewery in California, I think Nova Brewing. They do both sake and beer. So they're starting to kind of blend them. I believe they're pretty new. So it's definitely something that's happening a little bit more often. Ronin Fermentation in California is also another brewery that does it themselves. So they're definitely out there. They're not very common. They're not financially viable as far as the style. So it's more of a creative kind of like experimental thing to do.
Well, it's very drinkable. It's delicious. And, you know, it's another beer that I would have a pint of. So, you know,
trouble there, though.
Oh, well, too late. Thanks, Matt.
Yep, thanks.
Tell me who you are and where you're from.
My name is Michael Biggs. I'm from Temperance, Michigan. I'm a member of Glass City Mashers Home Brewing Club in Toledo.
What are we drinking here?
This is Walnut Brown by my own design. All the water from that beer, I tapped all my walnut trees and all my brewing water. Took me about 2 weeks to get about 15 gallons. I sparged with it. I mashed with it. I made no adjustments whatsoever on the chemical structure of the water. I use it straight. It's my own brown recipe. It's a U.S. Gold and Kent Golding's hops. And lightly roasted English walnut I racked the beer onto. And did a little secondary on the walnuts for about 2 weeks.
Wow. That's really good.
It's really good. It's like a walnut. It's not a peanut. It's not a cashew nut.
Not a hickory nut.
Not a hickory nut.
No, it's got a really nice toasty character.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's been a hot one. We're right about the end of this keg right now, and word's kind of been getting around, and people seem to really like this one. It's the third year I've been working on this particular beer. I can only brew it once a year, you know. So I think I'm going to stick with the recipe I have here, and we'll do it again next spring.
Did you happen to take I guess you tasted the sap.
And it's the bonus. And people ask me, why did you do that? Why did you use that water? For me, it was just kind of the gimmick of doing it. I never heard of anybody just using the water straight into a beer and brewing with it. I had the walnut trees, so I tapped them. I figured, what the heck, let's do that. It was kind of a gimmick, but the added bonus was that little bit of sugar. And as an experiment, I had a little bit of water left over, and I just let it ferment naturally just to, you know, see what happened with it, you know, just in a little bucket with the lid off in the garage to give it a taste. And it fermented out. That little bit of sugar in that water actually fermented out.
Did you take a gravity reading of the sap?
Yeah, it was 0.0010.
Oh.
If I'm right with my numbers.
Well, some friends of ours did a beer with maple sap. And I think it seems like to me the specific gravity was like 1.007 or 1.009, something around there. So, you know, you got to boil maple sap a long time to get maple syrup.
I'm assuming the same thing with walnut sap.
I read a lot about the people using that sap to make the syrup, and from what everything I've read, and I have tasted walnut syrup, they're very similar. But I didn't cook it down. I just used it to replace my brew water, you know. So I didn't make a syrup out of it.
It's really good.
It's terrific. I mean, it's not, again, my comment for the whole night is that everything we've had that sounds like it should be, what the hell is this? It's been really well made and very quaffable.
Yeah. Well, congratulations, Mike. It's delicious.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Good talking to you.
So tell me again who you are and where you're from.
So I'm Jim Fish. I'm from the South Jersey Fermentation Club. You guys are tasting a walnut beer. I made a beer, a brown ale with maple sap. Got 11 and a half gallons of maple sap. 8 gallons went to the beer. The other 3 and a half I put on the stove and cooked down to 3/4 of a gallon and threw that at the end of the boil, and it comes out fantastic. It's earthy. It's a brown ale.
And people might be surprised at how little sugar there is in maple sap.
Yes, it's not. But it gives it just enough like an earthy flavor to it.
So is it similar? Do you, in sipping this beer, this delicious walnut brown ale, are they similar?
They're similar, but they're different. The similarity is a brown ale. The trees give it something different that we don't have.
Right.
And I'm going to do it again because I found out that I got my sap from sugar maple. I found out behind my house I have swamp maples. Now I got 2 sugar maple trees behind my house. So I can I have to learn how to tap these trees and do it again.
I got maple trees in my yard. I wonder what kind they are.
It doesn't matter because you can tap them all and get it and do maple syrup.
Wow. But I can just see what would happen if I poked a hole in one of our maple trees. Susan might poke a hole in me.
I've got a hemlock at home.
No. That Queen Anne?
Is that a bad idea?
Yeah, that's a real bad idea.
You've been wanting to make that Queen Anne's lace beer.
That's right.
Yeah. No, do not do any of that at home. That's
James,
all of that was
James,
a joke.
Cheers.
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 Thank you, Jim. How's it going, eh? Tell me where you are, or who you are and where you're from, eh?
We're from Canada, and we're a homebrew club, eh?
Oh, yeah, a couple of hosers, eh?
Oh, sorry. All right, seriously, tell me who you are and where you're from.
Yeah, so we're Durham Homebrewers Club from Durham, Ontario, just east of Toronto. This is our second homebrew con. It's only second one in the last 3 years, I guess. Really enjoying it, and all I can say is, anybody listening, if you've never been to HomebrewCon, it's like Disneyland for homebrewers, and that's how I love to put it, because you're talking to vendors that you own equipment from, you're talking to people that make the software you brew with, and you're talking to homebrewers and trying all sorts of beers. So all I can say is make sure you get down to one. I know we're in San Diego next year, but this was a quick 7-hour trip for us from Toronto.
What are you drinking?
Right now, actually, I'm glad you asked. This is my favorite beer of the night. It's a walnut brown ale.
And we're drinking it too.
That's right. Cheers, guys.
Yeah, cheers.
Really cool that the brewer brewed it from walnut sap, essentially.
We just talked to him.
Yeah, and he didn't boil it down, used it as water, and then he also racked it onto walnuts at the end, and it's one of my favorite beers.
So as Canadians with a maple leaf on your flag, are you offended that other people are making beers with something other than maple sap?
No.
Well, maple leaves might take a sports angle to it, which I get very emotional about, but we won't go there. Maple syrup is, obviously passionate to Canadians. It's a very good point because we make maple syrup much the way that he made this beer. So we take that sap, really watery, we boil it like a 40-to-1 ratio, I believe, and real maple syrup.
So who else have we got here?
I'm Daryl Kelly.
Awesome.
And Jeremy Visser. We actually consider the walnut thing a bit of a challenge. We're maybe going to do a better maple beer next year for HomebrewCon.
Yeah, I wonder if there's rules that get, you guys are in the
the baseball league, you know, even though, you know, you're across the border, I'm wondering if there could be a homebrew con across the border in Canada one day.
We absolutely hope that happens. It could be like a one-time thing, like one city, just like we have our Toronto baseball team. You guys could all come up here to Toronto for a homebrew con. We would love it. We'd love to host all you guys.
So our club is on the board for the CHA, Canadian Homebrew Association, and we've thought about doing something like that. The problem is the population compared to the U.S. is about 10%. So getting the kind of attendance up there to make it actually worthwhile is tricky. Not off the table, but definitely something we thought about.
Well, you know, it's not a...
I would think Toronto, though, would be the city. I mean, it's... You're right, Detroit. I mean, you got a lot of population. It would be easy to pull from.
Detroit, you're right, 4 hours from Detroit. It would be a hard sell, but maybe AHA, if there's a lot of passports required to come over the border, so it would be a tough one. It would be a CHA thing where it would be Canadians only, I would think, a much smaller sale. But.
Well, what you need to do is a pilot program, you know, just with Canadian homebrew clubs, and then invite us.
There you go. James, yeah, again, we don't have necessarily for our club, we don't have entry fees, so we kind of pride ourselves on that we, anybody can come and join. But as far as sponsoring you to come, we'll make it happen, I promise.
We might even pay our own way. So,
hey, I heard you say Toronto's beautiful, so there you go.
Yeah.
I've been to British Columbia.
Which is way more beautiful than Toronto.
And they have really good Eggs Benny up there. So
yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I'm all in. Yeah. Cheers to you guys. Welcome.
Cheers.
Yeah. Yep. Thank you very much for having us, guys.
Okay, tell me who you are and where you're from.
Hi there, I'm Todd Donnelly. I'm from Chardon, Ohio.
And what's your club?
Society of Northeast Ohio Brewers. We're the snobs.
Mmm, what am I drinking?
You're drinking a cherry cider that I added a little bit of a cherry pie component to it, so a little bit of graham cracker, a little bit of cinnamon, a little bit of a, you know, you want the cherries, but you also want what's the cherry baked on.
Oh my God, that's really good. So it started out as a cider?
Yeah, I love doing ciders. I do probably 100 gallons of ciders a year, and cherry's kind of the flavor I like to play with, so I do a base cider, I do some Montmorency cherry extract to give it that little tart cherry, just nice background note, and then from there I kind of play with it. So do I want to do a dessert cider? I'll obviously sweeten it up and I'll add some spices. And tonight for club night, I said, you know, there's people here drinking 400 different beers. I wanted to make something they'd remember, so I said cherry pie. Just seems like something that'd be nice. So I did this one. I did a spicy ginger because I figured those are the two things that most folks will remember.
If Steve were here, he'd say he likes spicy Marianne, but, you know, that's another thing.
It's true. Very different.
I don't know if it's because of the hat you're wearing. You're wearing a Santa Claus hat. But I taste this. I do get cherries. But I could be talked into cranberry. And I don't know if it's the combination of the cherry and the apple.
Could be. I think at some point we all get that memory from somewhere in our past that says, I've had this at Thanksgiving dinner. I've had something like this at some holiday function. And because we're doing Christmas, I said, you know, let's figure out something that would evoke a holiday kind of feeling. And when I made this one, I said, all right, everybody wants to grab a fork and dig in.
Yeah. And what did you do for the crust base?
So I use a graham cracker crust extract. So I love making Halloween spice beers. My favorite one that I like to clone is Pumpkin out of Southern Tier. And to get that flavor that they do, you have to get a graham cracker crust extract. And I bought some of that, and it's been a lot of fun to play with. It does not take much. You can obviously go way beyond real quick. But with the cherry, it just, you get the acidity and the spice from the cherry. And then that kind of comes in on the back end and says, and here's the end of the fork.
Yeah, we had a very delicious key lime pie beer from the opposite end of the hall. And they also used a graham cracker crust extract as well. So for a 5-gallon batch, how much would you use?
for 5 gallons, it's tough to say. When I did this, I was doing 2.5, 3 gallons. And I do it drop-wise. I put the drops in, I take a taste. I put more drops in, I take a taste. So for me, if I say, oh, you need to use 3 mLs, that's not going to work for everybody.
Right.
So it's what do you want the flavor to be? And then you sneak up on it. And then when you're there, stop.
Yeah, you're a wise man. That's perfect. No, that's perfect. You wait till it's fermented. And I'm assuming there's no fermentables in the extract, so you can at the time of serving or the serving vessel or the bottling bucket or whatever, you sample it in, and then you get to where you want, and then you're there.
Exactly. The one thing I would say is you can't take it out.
Yeah.
Once you put it in, unless you're going to blend in more, so you want to sneak up on it. And, yeah. and just have that mental picture of, what am I doing? I would do it on day one. I would walk away for a day.
Wow.
I would come back and I would say, now that I have a fresh tongue, is that what I wanted it to taste like? And you can get tongue blind like anything else.
Yeah.
And with this one, it was just minor tweaks for maybe 2 or 3 days. And then I said, I think that'll work.
Well, it's very well done, and it's very well fermented as well. So technically, like I'm not a judge, but technically, it's very well done, and it just it does bring back holiday memories.
There you go. Cheers.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good time.
Okay, this is probably going to be the last thing I do this evening here. Zot, what are you got me into?
So earlier, I tried a raspberry sour, and I was like, this is really amazing and go really good against something. And we talked about things. I'm like, a really good chocolate. And he's like, oh, you should try the nitro stout, or the stout next door is super chocolate. Because this is club night. Like, the booth is like 4 feet away. So I did. And it was amazing. So now James is going to try each individually.
So this is the, what is that? From the Stony Creek Homebrewers. There you got in your hand.
That's in the raspberry sour, and then Lancaster Brewers, their nitro stout. Sorry, it's just stout. I keep saying nitro. It's a milk stout. It's got really good lactose and just wonderful chocolate notes. So,
wow, that's
you just tried this. You just tried the raspberry. What do you think?
Yeah, nice and tart and fruity.
Yeah, super raspberry.
Yes, and then.
So this is the stout from the club next door.
Oh. It's kind of an earthy, chocolatey stout. And now you're gonna blend into my empty glass. Sound effects. Oh my.
Glug 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 glug.
Oh, that's good. Wow.
Sorry.
So Desiree just walked up. Now you have to taste this blend that Zot made.
So try this first.
Okay. What am I doing? Okay.
Raspberry sour.
This is great radio.
Oh, very good. Nice and tart. If you can see my face right now, you would know.
The tart face.
Yep. This is a milk stout.
Milk stout.
James.
Solid.
And then here's the blend.
Sorry.
Your taste buds.
I'm working on this. So
you're getting
okay.
Taste buds whiplash.
That is excellent. That is the best way to drink those two. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good.
So the answer to your where's the Carolina Reaper that we've talked about quite a bit, it's the Badass Club that is around the corner of that way.
Badass Club.
They just have a barely blue sign above.
I saw that. Okay.
Gingerbread
okay.
Reaper.
All right. Gingerbread Reaper.
All right. Say goodnight, Gracie.
Good night, Gracie.
Thank y'all.
So this is one of these cases where I actually talked to the brewer of the sour so much, I went next door and talked to the brewer of the nitro and introduced him. They're like, holy crap, this is an amazing beer put together.
You got peanut butter in my chocolate.
They totally made a Reese's comment too, and it was super accurate.
Right.
It was an amazing blend.
Awesome. I think this is the end because they call last call. Thank you, Zot. It's good to see you again.
James, always a pleasure.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Well, thanks again to Zot O'Connor for that last-minute blending session. And also, many thanks to everybody that we talked to. including Desiree and Dave and Steve, of course. As you can tell, we had a great time. Maybe a little too good. That's not the end of the interviews from our trip to Pittsburgh. We spent a great evening with Malcolm Frazier at Hop Farm Brewing, and that's coming up in the next few weeks. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. In the meantime, stay well and stay tuned. So long.